1. We made the announcement on the House floor, but that doesn't carry everywhere in the world, and I do apologize for you having to wait for us. We're going to reverse the order of the agenda. We'll do House Bill 3486 first, and we will have a work session on 3486. Work session on House Bill 3486 is now open. And Dallas, could you explain the amendment to us?
Oh, I forgot to give one to Representative Bowie. We now have a dash 2 amendment, Mr. Chair, to 3486, which would replace, take out lines 19 through 22 on page 1, and then on line 23, restore the bracketed material and delete the boldface material on 23. So line 23 stays the same. And on page 2, restore C, so we leave C in and delete the D, so that is the same. And then delete lines 16 through 24, which is right in the middle, and replace it with this notwithstanding paragraph A, the department may not use the internet to make information available to the public except as required by paragraph C of this subsection. Boy, you have it in front of you. It's just, I think it puts some parameters around what the department may publish on the internet. The department shall use the internet to make the information described in this subsection available to the public if the information is about a person that A is determined to be predatory sex offender as provided in ORS, who has also been determined pursuant to the rules of the agency to present the highest risk of reoffending and to require the widest range of notification, or if they were found to be sexually violent, dangerous offender under the statutes. And then it limits, it describes the information to be made available, the person's name and address, a physical description, which would include age, height, weight, eye color, and hair color, type of vehicle the person is known to drive, any conditions or restrictions upon the person's probation, parole, or post-prison supervision or conditional release, description of the person's primary and secondary targets, description of the person's method of offense, and a current photograph. If the person is under supervision, the name or telephone number of the person's parole and probation officer, and if the person is not under supervision, a contact information for the Department of State Police. So this kind of puts some sideboards around the offenders that this would apply to, whose information would be put on the internet. And this, the amendments to this section of statute would become operative on July 1st of 2006. This would give time to implement, and it allows the Department of State Police to take any action before that operative date that is necessary to enable the department to exercise on and after that date the duties imposed by this.
Questions, concerns on the amendment? Hearing,
Mr. Chair. From my perspective, I would just point out a couple of things. The dash two amendments were requested by us after the last hearing because of the issues that the defense lawyers had raised. My own personal preferences, I still prefer the dash one amendments. However, I wanted to put the dash twos in front of the committee and have, you know, if the committee is more supportive of the dash twos, because it does take care of the issues that the defense lawyers brought up, then I certainly would like to see us adopt the dash two amendments. The dash two amendments take the dash ones, but also then addresses the issue that that the defense lawyers brought up with regards to the state police being able to post everyone. So That's how the dash two takes care of that.
Thank you, Representative Crummell. Any other questions, concerns?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move the, do I dare move the dash one amendments, or would you, does the committee?
We just read the dash twos, and I would keep with the spirit of the meeting and move the amendment we talked about.
All right. Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3486, please.
Having moved the dash two amendments, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Wirth?
No.
Representative Whip?
Aye.
Chair Dolan?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I got to wait for you.
Yes, sir.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Would you care to move make a motion to move the bill?
Yes. Did you want to announce that the dash two has been...
the dash two's having been passed. Representative Crummell, you may move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 3486 as amended with the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Questions? Representative Boyd.
I just want to state the record that I remain opposed to this bill for the reasons I raised in the last hearing, and because there's just too many questions left unanswered, I think, about the possible implementation of this kind of a system statewide. I think that there's, you know, I stated earlier, I'm mother of two young girls, and I would not consider myself a softie on sex offenders or at any, you know, stretch of the imagination. But I'm concerned about just pouring more resources into the same old system that we've gotten, and that's just running scared for your whole life. You're just running around trying to figure out who these people are, and we're not really curing them, we're not fixing the problem. And I think that this is more likened to a, you know, vigilante kind of pitchforks and, you know, lanterns at night, because I don't see, and I don't see anything that addresses even the possibility of what happens when one of these people are misidentified, or, you know, I brought up earlier, if it's a juvenile and it's the parent's car that the offender is driving in, is then the parent's car going to be placed on this website? And I just think there's just too many questions left unanswered, and unfortunately we haven't figured out a way as a society to fix this problem. And so I don't have a lot of faith in this bill in doing much more than making us more afraid of more things out there that we can't control. So I, for those reasons, and like I said earlier in the last hearing, I oppose the bill.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, just a couple of things I'd like to put on the record, if I may.
Certainly.
We are gaining additional support. Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers, the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, and then, of course, at the last hearing, the State Sheriff's Association, District Attorney's Association, and the Association of Community Corrections Directors. The criminal defense lawyers also have called us back to let us know that they did support the dash two amendments that we then have put into the bill. We've also been talking with some of our private sector partners, and there is a lot of support in the private sector for this type of activity, and I think that there's a lot of things that we can get either at a reduced cost or a donated cost. I'm glad to see that we got the cost breakdown from the OSP. I'll go through that as well. The other thing is that I don't know if articles got sent around or not to everyone, maybe not. But anyway, there was some articles that we made copies of that were in the paper from 5 years ago when we passed this. And I would just point out that when we passed Senate Bill 740, and OSP basically was ready to go, and then of course when the group of sex offenders went to court and got the injunction, it sort of set things back. But we were basically ready to go, and I know some of the internet, some of the technologies have changed, but it seems like they've gotten cheaper, and there was, Senate Bill 740 did not have a fiscal attached to it. So I just bring those things up. I just wanted to get them onto the record, Mr. Chair. Also, I would point out, if you talk to people that treat sex offenders, they will tell you that they are, that sex offenders are generally never cured. There is not a cure for sex offending, for sexual offenders. Getting them to not exhibit the behavior that got them into trouble in the first place is an ongoing process. It's kind of like the alcoholic. An alcoholic has to always recognize that they are alcoholic, and that they have to. It's a constant day to day vigilance on their part to make sure that they don't fall back into the behavior that gets them in trouble in the first place. And sex offenders are much along those same lines. With regards to the juveniles, let's assume that somebody as a juvenile got convicted at the age of 14. By the time they would finish whatever supervision they had and that sort of thing in incarceration, they most likely would be beyond the age of majority. So the effect that this is going to have on juveniles is minimal at the most. So I appreciate your patience, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for hearing this bill.
Any other comments? Representative Burdick.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell had mentioned private sector partners, and I just wanted to also for the record state that I got an email last Friday from a constituent of mine in Bend who works for Microsoft Corporation. He was inquiring about a contact name for making a donation to assist in creating the internet-based notification program for this. He said in his email that Microsoft will match his personal donation, and he's quite confident that with the free software the site could be developed for less than $5,000.
Thank you very much for that information, Representative Burley. Are there any other questions or comments? If not, I will ask the clerk to call the roll on House Bill 3486.
Representative Burley.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Word.
No.
Representative
Dibb.
Aye.
Chair Dolan.
Yeah, aye. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3486, and I'd like to assign a carrier. And Representative Crummell, would you carry the bill?
I would be delighted to, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll move to the second item on our agenda, which is computing and network infrastructure consolidation. Don Fleming and Mike Fries. Thank you for the plan. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries, Deputy State Chief Information Officer. At last Thursday's hearing, toward the close of the hearing, you requested that we provide planning documents associated with this project. I've done that, and I'm prepared to discuss any questions you might have about those. We also spent some time talking about the budget versus the business case, and I think that it's fair to say there may be some confusion about what some of those numbers are and what they represent, so I'd like to take the opportunity today, if I may, to clarify a few points so that we can eliminate some of that confusion. So if you'll indulge me for just a minute, what I'd like to talk about some of the points that were raised last week, specifically around the money that's, or the placeholder budget that's been placed in DAS for the state data center, and describe where that fits in this process. We have been working over the course of the last year plus on this project, developing, as I was describing earlier, a top-down business case that would tell us not only whether the project made sense from a financial perspective, but what the approximate range of savings would be. That process has its own timeline, and that process does not perfectly sync up with the state budget process. We have also been working at the same time over the course of the last few months developing a budget from the ground up, and those are real numbers. It shows the actual amount of expenditure that would be required in the new data center. It also, part of that exercise is also going out and working with the 12 agencies and identifying what they're spending today to perform those same functions. So that placeholder budget that you see in the DAS budget for the state data center represents the initial placeholder for the operations of the data center. It is not a request for new money. it's a change in the budget structure, because the data center will have to have a budget, and the money which agencies formerly expended themselves to provide those functions internally instead would be spent as a fee for service, buying those services from the data center. So that's what that number is about. What we know from the budget process, and I'm not prepared to talk in detail today about the budget process, we will do that in the Ways and Means process, and the legislature will have the opportunity to review and approve that budget. But the budget process to date is showing us that the business case is in fact reliable. It's we're going to be able to achieve the savings targets that we believe we can achieve there. As I mentioned earlier, the 0507 budget is considered to be a transition period, because we'll have to spend money to get from where we are today to where we need to be. We're going to be spending less when we get into the need-to-be state. We'll be spending less than what we're currently spending today to perform the same functions for a variety of reasons: greater efficiencies, fewer people required to do the same amount of work, those kinds of things. And then there's a repayment of that one-time transition cost, which is funded through certificates of participation. So you will see in the data center budget the cost to repay that debt, a piece of debt service, the operational cost, which would be less than what it costs agencies to provide those functions today. And the intent is that for the 0507 biennium, there's no net change necessarily in the amount of money it costs to provide this function, and that bienniums going forward, we would hit return on investment and begin saving money in accordance with what the business case has told us today.
Questions?
Representative Witt. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just indicated a moment ago that there would be fewer people required to do the same amount of work, and I'm just wondering what the plans are for, lack of a better term, would at this point be a surplus number of people.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, we have gone through a process of negotiating with SEIU Local 503, the union that represents the bulk of the employees who would be potentially impacted by this transition. What would happen is that folks will be applying for and competing for data center jobs competitively, and everybody who's impacted, who is an affected employee, meaning whose job function goes away as a result of consolidation, whose job function basically becomes the responsibility of the data center, has an opportunity to compete for those jobs in the data center. Now, not everyone who currently performs those functions will end up with a job in the data center, because we require a few people to do that. When that happens, those staff would then be released back into their agency for whatever process there is within the agency, and typically what happens is they go into a normal layoff process. If there were other open jobs within the agency, they would have an opportunity through the normal process that's already been negotiated to go into those jobs, and they would have the opportunity always to apply for other jobs within the agency.
Follow up. And how many people are we looking at, total number of jobs at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, the current business case and the current, by the way, budget process, we have identified 156 positions that are in scope, meaning those functions will go away. They'll be transferred to the state data center. We may end up with more as we finalize this. That's one of those things that it could move a little bit in either direction. We're estimating at this point about 95 FTE required to operate the state data center initially. Over time, it probably will require less, because over time, you'll see more and more consolidation and standardization occur within the data center. So there's about 60-some-odd positions that can be impacted there.
Thank you.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, you'd mentioned the placeholder budget that's there now, and if I understood what you said, it's a placeholder because you haven't had the opportunity yet to go back with the other agencies, the cooperating agencies, and estimate what their costs were for these things. Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, actually there are two components to this. One is the data center budget, so it's building the budget for the data center to provide all the services that it's going to need to provide. That's what that piece of the placeholder budget looks like. For each of the 12 participating agencies, including DAS, there's another piece that is, those are the costs and functions that come out of the agency budget, and then some portion of which would be replaced by an amount of money to pay fee for service to the data center.
So is it the latter follow-up, Mr.
Chairman? Follow-up, certainly.
So was it the latter part, then, that you said you haven't been able to come up with good figures for yet?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I want to clarify. We actually are coming up with good figures for that right now. We're just chasing down the final numbers on both of those.
Follow-up again.
Thank you. It seemed to me that if we look, for example, in the business case, where we talk about annual recurring savings, let's just take, for example, server and storage, the updated business case savings of $4.91 million, it would seem to me, unless I'm misunderstanding something, that you've got those figures pretty well nailed down if you're able to start estimating these types of savings, wouldn't you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I want to take a minute to explain the difference between the business case and this. What you're looking at in the business case is the last of the top-down analysis, okay? So it's a continuation of the work we've done before. What we're doing now is building that budget by going out and actually counting what's being spent in the agencies and comparing it. We're getting down to the detail and comparing it to what we'll build in the new data center. So we can answer those questions with more and more detail now through the budget process, which is why we don't want to spend any more time coming back and updating you on a top-down business case. It really doesn't become relevant going forward, except that it helped us establish a target. It served that purpose, and it's also helped us identify what the savings opportunities are. But we can answer those questions as we present the budget.
Questions? Representative.
Thank you. Regarding the approximately 150 state employees that will be affected with the initial 12 scenic agencies relative to the consolidation, you mentioned that approximately 95 jobs will be required to man the data center, and you mentioned that those people displaced by the consolidation would then have the opportunity to compete for these positions in the data center. So what percentage of the overall staffing, this 95, approximately 95, what percentage of overall staffing is expected to be done through internal transfer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, the bulk of the overall staffing, with a very few minor exceptions, the data center director position we're currently recruiting for, in fact, should have that process finished very quickly. That will be an external candidate, and it's possible that some of the key managerial positions may be external candidates, although I don't know. That process will sort itself out. There's a number of reasons why we want to have the people currently performing this work in the agencies be the ones performing it in the data center. One is that it's absolutely critical to the success of the data center that we get knowledge transfer, that people understand the business requirements and how to process the workload in the agency, that those people end up working in that new data center. And there are a number of other very good reasons for wanting to get the people that are currently performing that work. So when we do the recruitment to fill those technical positions, the people who are currently impacted will have the first opportunity to apply and compete for those. And the only time we would not fill them with somebody who's already performing that work in a state agency is if we had a position where there literally was nobody who was qualified to perform it. It's difficult, frankly, to imagine that kind of a scenario for the bulk of the what the data center does, because those people are performing that work today. We may be asking them to use slightly different and more modern technologies than they're accustomed to using. We may be asking them to use different processes, but they're performing essentially the same work, so they would all be qualified to compete for those jobs.
Follow-up. So of those approximately, say, 95 positions, what percentage do you expect to be filled by current employees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, I don't have a specific percentage. I'd say in excess of 90%, though. I mean, the bulk of them. Most of those positions we had always anticipated recruiting internally.
Questions? The placeholder number, let me start. The building to house Scenic, that money came from the E-Board?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The approval for that funding came from the E-Board. The building itself is funded through certificates of participation. And the way to think about how that works, the way that appears as a cost to the data center is as an ongoing facilities lease cost. So if you think about the analogy I would use is a home mortgage. if you're going to buy a home, usually you don't go out and plop down $200,000 or however many dollars it costs to buy the home out of cash. Typically, that's financed. And then what happens is the ongoing monthly cost of financing that over a 30-year mortgage cycle becomes the part of your household budget that you have to pay each month. That's the way it works for the state data center as well. The state built the building. It's depreciated over a long period of time. And the facilities division within the Department of Administrative Services leases that building to the state data center.
And the initial cost of the building was how much, Mike?
Mr. Chair, it was estimated at $20 million. I believe it's actually under that right now.
And then we had some security money that was approved by the interim committee and then went through the e-board, and I think that was $8
million. Mr. Chair, I think that's approximately correct, yes.
And the placeholder number for the budget committee, as a curiosity, that number is, 80, what is that, 88 million, 82 million?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's a placeholder. It was just a number that's put in there. So that as we went through, it hasn't been approved by anybody. As we go through the budget process, it will become the number to operate.
What number was submitted? Do you have any idea?
76,600,000.
76.6.
That was in the, if I may, Mr. Chair, because I have that budget. That was in the Department of Administrative Services budget. It's no longer there now. In each of the 12 agencies, including the Department of Administrative Services, there was also a placeholder of plus or minus $1, so a net of zero. The minus $1 was for personal services because they figured they would lose some staff at some point in time during the 05-07 biennium, and the $1 plus was for the charges for services that they would be expected to pay to the data center. So there were 12, actually 13 specific placeholder items.
And what I'm going with this, Mike, is that the $104 million has actually been approved as part of other agency budgets. For example, if we had equipment replacement in the Department of Human Services for $6 million, that number would be approved in the Department of Human Services, but would later be moved out of the Department of Human Services over to DAS and into Scenic, is how that would work. Do I get that correct?
Maybe I better weigh in, Mr.
This anything to clear this up?
Okay. The answer to
I'm
your
not
question,
questioning where the answer comes.
The quick answer to your question is no. That's not the way it's going to operate. If monies that are currently spent are being budgeted in each of the agencies, the Scenic project has been taken out and will be put in a separate bill, so that at the same time funding is provided for the finish up costs of the data center and the operating costs as it moves operations to it. We will fund it there. Also, we will be making adjustments to the other 12 agency budgets to reduce position authority and change expenditure categories and reduce them to reflect the shift in costs from internally doing it to contracting or paying for the central data center. So you may see a larger expenditure for the data center than you would see because of one-time costs that are funded like with debt, then you will see being paid like the monthly payments that would be paid out of the other state agencies. So with respect to your question about services and supplies, for example, or equipment that would be budgeted in a given department, if that money were deemed to be no longer necessary because of this, that money would be removed. Again, that would be part of that final budget of this project when we remove those expenditures from the various agencies, that will be part and parcel of the development of the budget of the Scenic. It will have its own equipment, and most of it will be purchased and installed. Some may be lifted and moved. But if an expenditure is no longer necessary in a state agency because of the move, the expenditure will be somewhere else. In other words, if the Department of Human Services has, what was it, $6 million for replacement of computers. If it no longer would need that money because the computers now will reside in the consolidated data center, then that money would be, in fact, removed from the Department of Human Services budget. Now, they will still have some money in their budgets because they'll have to replace desktops and things of that nature. But for the things that are in scope of the consolidated data center, there would not be a duplication of expenditure. I mean, for the same item, the Department of Human Services will be paying for the data center operations based on usage, is principally what there's going to be a model that they're developing for a chargeback. And so they will no longer be paying for the rent of the facility that they house in their data center. When it's phased out, they will not have the personnel with the data center. They may not even have the need to replace a computer now, because that computer will be over at the consolidated data center. So those expenditures will be removed from the Department of Human Services. They'll be replaced with a fee for a service expenditure. But that's the plan for the budget process.
My next question would be, as a legislative committee charged with two jobs, one finding a more economical cost-saving modus of operandi, and the other being security, I feel comfortable that we have security handled. But as a legislator who comes into session 6 months out of every 24, and our budget happens to be hitting when we're not here, or as this budget process works, and it makes sense to me that you would transfer funds, but what is difficult for me to get my arms around is, if I were reelected, which I intend to be, and came back in 24 months, how will I know how much we actually saved? And why can't I know that before I go out of session? As I look at the detail that has gone into the planning, and the plan has day-to-day detail on where we will be, it would seem that as a legislator, I should be able to ask for a detailed estimate of savings, and not top-down, mm-hmm. but from the bottom up. And I should be able to hold that list on high and say, this committee accomplished their work. But this model doesn't give that to me, and that makes me, I don't know whether we met for 6 months and accomplished the number one objective of the committee.
Mr. Chair, if I might take a moment to respond to that. I agree. That's exactly what we intend to produce through the budget process, is something that the state of Oregon commits to executing, too. That's exactly what the budget is. I can't speak to the details of the budget today. That's part of the Ways and Means process, but that's exactly what that document is all about and what that process is all about. The budget process down from the ground up becomes a thing down to the dollars that we commit to, and it will validate the top-down business case, which, you are correct, does not answer those kinds of questions for you. It only tells you what the savings opportunity is and what the sets the general, sort of the general target. It tells you whether it's a good business decision or not a good business decision to go forward.
So will that be going to Ways and Means? And will I be able to hike over to one of the subcommittee chair's office and have a frank discussion with them and get that sheet of paper? Will that happen before the session goes out, before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair, since we need the legislature to approve the budget in order to take one step forward, I believe that that's absolutely the case, yes.
Then I'm going to turn my attention to Representative Krupp and say I will be over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I look forward to you being in our committee to explore this a little bit further. I don't see in anywhere in this, either one of these two binders, what I asked for, which was a complete accounting of all the money we're spending on this project. I don't see it here. I don't see the $76 million notated here anywhere. So how do I know what the business case is for repaying that money and if we're really going to save any money? This is what worries me about the way this is being presented to us. And if you're going to present this same docket to me down in Ways and Means, forget it. I'm not voting for this thing. This is absurd to come here and to say to me, we want you to expend $104, $114 million
and we can't detail to you all the money that is in this budget request. I've got to have more, guys, otherwise this thing's not going anywhere.
I'll stay with my original comment. I'll be down to see you when you get your information. I think, do we have any questions from any other members of the committee?
Yes, I do have a quick question. As I'm looking over, again, I go back to the documents that we received throughout this session, and over and over we get the estimates that 70% of the cost savings overall, of this estimated $5 million annually, will be due or achieved through a reduction in FTE, reduction in personnel. And yet, so if we're going to achieve 70% of the cost savings through reducing personnel, and yet we're only reducing, looks like if we're, you talk about 150 employees will be affected, and then, but 95 will be used to man the overall system at the end. So we're only talking about 55 positions actually being lost from my calculations. So, and I don't see how that would total up to 70% of the cost savings. So in my mind, and what I get from looking over LFO's analysis of the governor's budget is I see that what we're doing is replacing a lot of highly skilled, highly technical, high-paying jobs of state employees now with a lot of help desk type of people. A lot of less skilled, less costly positions that will be the bulk of this 95 positions afterwards when we're done with this consolidation. So you're shaking your head. What positions exactly are we losing? How technical are they? And then the 95 that we're going to end up with, you know, in terms of job function, what is it equivalent of?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wirth, no, it's not true that you would have, in fact, if anything, you tend to create bigger, better jobs in the new data center. You'd probably see more stratification of jobs because you've now consolidated all these functions together. So instead of having what we've encountered as we've been working with the agencies, what we call fractional FTE, where somebody's doing everything from running the administering the email system to building the servers to running the network, that we would have more focused jobs. And typically, when we budgeted for those, we budgeted them at the higher level ISS series. You would not be replacing them with a bunch of help desk type jobs. The second point I would make about that is that the 95 number is a going in number for the data center. It's based on our ability to determine how far we can get in the architecture, which I talked about last week. The architecture has a short-term objective, which is to consolidate as much as possible, and a longer-term objective, which is to continue to improve the efficiency in that data center through further consolidation. We think that the numbers in the data center would come down more because 95 is still well above medium by industry standard for that kind of compute load and complexity. So where we're going from today is the 156, and there will probably be more positions that end up in scope as we refine this, down to 95 initially that are required for that data center. In fact, I think the actual number is 93 that we're budgeting on right now today. And over time, you would see that efficiency actually improve, either as we add additional agencies, you wouldn't require additional staffing, and or we might be able to do the same work with less staff.
Hold on, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Wirth.
And the jobs in the data center, you said that they would... When I asked about internal transfer, you said that it basically, I didn't get the sense that these folks would have any special type of priority when competing for the jobs in the data center.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wirth, what we want to be able to do, let me describe briefly the process. I want to make sure I don't get this mixed up. The jobs will be identified. In fact, we're hiring the director position hopefully shortly. Most of what they will focus on initially is building the organization, so helping flesh out the position descriptions for those jobs, the detailed organization, and then begin recruiting for those. And we recruit from amongst the 12 participating agencies, specifically those people who are impacted, whose jobs will go away as a result of consolidation. And those people would compete for the jobs in the same way that they would compete for any other job, only they would have the first round advantage. And once those positions, if they're all filled, we're done recruiting for those jobs. If they're not all filled, then we expand it to state government, and ultimately we would expand it and make it an open competitive recruitment if that became necessary.
So final question, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
So does that fulfill, in your mind, that the governor's commitment that these 95 positions or these jobs in the data center be prioritized for those people who are being displaced by the consolidation?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, yes, it does. And there's, again, aside from wanting to do that because it's the right thing to do, there are really good, compelling business reasons to do that. The sooner that we can answer the question, who has a job in the data center, I think the better off we're going to be from a morale perspective. And it's important for the success of the data center that we get people who understand what the requirements are for the agencies that this data center is going to be supporting. That's really critical because the folks in the agencies who rely on those functions internally have a lot of confidence in their staff today. And it's really essential that we get people out of those agencies into the data center.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Krupp.
Mike, I have it on pretty good authority that the contractor for this project, Accenture, has in fact, and could you verify this, has never participated in a consolidation of a data center in any state to this size before. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, that is not correct. They have participated in data center consolidations. I think where that you'll hear a lot of these kinds of things come up because, frankly, these kinds of projects are not immensely popular. They represent a big change for people in state government. They put people's jobs at risk. And so we've been dealing with these kinds of issues and allegations from the very beginning of the project. What I can tell you is this. The question came up specifically in an all-employee meeting where we invited people from every state agency to participate. And the question was asked, name a specific project that's exactly down to the detail like the one we're conducting here in Oregon that Accenture has conducted. And the answer is, well, we don't have one like that. And that has since become the urban legend, for lack of a better term, that Accenture doesn't do this work. When we went out and solicited for a vendor partner to help us with this, we got four world-class vendors who do this kind of work. That's one of the reasons that we went out to get a partner, because, frankly, the state of Oregon doesn't know how to do this. We have a lot of people who think they do, but we don't know how to do this by ourselves. So we solicited a world-class partner who knows how to do this. One piece of that selection process was a rigorous check of their references and their other projects that were similar to this, both in the public and private sector, and we did that as due diligence as part of the selection process.
When are you expecting, we've seen a top-down business plan with projected savings, and you're planning a bottom-up budget. When will that budget be done?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that we're really close on that budget right now. I'm not personally preparing the budget, but I can't speak to you about the budget process today, but my understanding was that our folks were supposed to be talking to Ways and Means representatives sometime in the next couple of weeks, having preliminary discussions about that budget.
I share Representative Krupp's concern, particularly for the charge of this committee, and I believe that I'm going to ask the Speaker if I might not have one more meeting. I would really like to see that budget, and it's the same as with the plan. What I want that budget for is so that I can come back later and say, this is where we plan to save money. Did we save it? And if we saved it, celebrate. And if we didn't save it, find out why. And if there's a good reason for why we didn't save it, then say, well done. And if there's not a good reason, then pursue the questioning on that. But I think in order for this committee to meet its obligation and its charge, I'm going to have to ask you for a date certain. And I do want to see that budget, and I do want to be able to carry it around with me so that as this project progresses, I can say to people, the state of Oregon this time around is implementing the plan as it should have been, and I'm sure you'll be there. I would also like, and I'm sure you're going to prepare this for Representative Krupp and his committee, an accounting to date. We're up over $100 million, and I feel as a representative of the people, I have to account for that. Whether it's placeholder or building or security money, we're into this, and for a rather large chunk of change. I want to be able to demonstrate savings, and I want to compare cost to savings. So, I'm sure that Representative Krupp will have a different slant on this in his committee, but that's where I'd like to go with this. And with that, are there any other questions by Mr. Representative Cromwell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, you mentioned early in your opening remarks that the amount of money that the agencies spend versus the amount that they'll spend with Scenic, and what DAS will charge. Is there a difference between, and I'm going to assume, well, I'm not going to assume anything, I'm going to let you answer the question. Is there a difference between what DAS will charge and what the agencies would have spent had Scenic not occurred?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, there probably will be some differences. At the macro level, the budget basically works like, and it's reflective of the business case. We spend X amount today. When the data center reaches steady state, we'll spend less than X amount, and there are transition costs. The plan for the 2005-07 budget cycle is, and this is why we're going through this process right now, is that it should cost on the net for the state for the debt service for that one-time transition cost, and the operation for the state data center should cost the same or less than what it costs currently with the current model for delivering that. And then over time, as those one-time transition costs are repaid, it costs substantially less than what it costs today. Now, on an individual agency basis, because of the way that folks allocate costs and so on internally, there may be some differences. Some may be more in some areas and less in other areas because the rate structure is going to be different, but on the whole, it will cost less money in the new data center when it reaches equilibrium.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So then, is there a quantifiable number that you have that the agencies have already been spending on data center costs and computing infrastructure and that sort of thing, and then what's in the budget here, so that taking into account, as you mentioned, those transitional costs, we can then see what that savings is. We can quantify now what the agencies are spending.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I think right now we're around $100 million or more that we see the agencies are spending in this area, and we're still tracking down the last few pieces of that. What you'll see happen is, as we identify those costs, those costs will be isolated in the agency budget through the process that Dallas described. A budget is created for the data center that consists of those costs, and that what happens is the agencies buy service from the data center, and we manage those costs down in the state data center.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What assurances can you give us that this consolidation isn't going to turn into the next DMV fiasco?
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, a number of assurances, one being that we learned a lot from the DMV experience a number of years ago. The DMV experience was, one, a very complex business change and application implementation effort. That's not what this is. This is actually much, much simpler than that. This is consolidation of infrastructure, which has been done thousands and thousands of times in the private sector, not quite as frequently in the public sector, but it's well known how to approach and how to do these. Two, we intentionally brought in a contractor who knows how to do this so we can marry up two bodies of knowledge really effectively. One is our understanding of what our business requirements are and how we do things today, and the contractor's knowledge and experience of how you take that and consolidate it to produce savings, and without breaking anything in the meantime, by the way. The third thing we've done is we put a lot of project management rigor on this project, and we've applied it where it made sense to apply. When we were doing the initial top-down business case development, we didn't have tons of project management machinery around it because, frankly, what we were doing was a mathematical exercise. We were doing some inventory, running it through a process to determine what the projected savings target was. When we switched over into the detailed planning and implementation, and this occurred about the beginning of January, we substantially beefed up both the project office and the discipline that we put around this, and a lot of the documents that I provided you describe those processes and the project management structure. That was one of the problems that, from my understanding, I understand I wasn't there when this happened, but my understanding is the DMV project suffered from some problems in that area. And finally, as part of that, we have independent third-party quality assurance And that vendor is responsible for coming in and making sure, one, that we know what we're doing, we describe what it is we want to do, two, that we've got the discipline and structure in place to accomplish it, that we're following those processes and so on that we've described, and that the whole thing makes sense. And they would provide that feedback through the governance structure to our steering committee, which is comprised of the agency CIOs who are participating in the project, and the governing board, which are the agency directors whose agencies' data centers will be consolidated.
Mr. Chairman, a couple more questions.
Sure.
Thank you. You just mentioned quality assurance. Now, it's my understanding you have you placed an RFP some time ago for an outside consultant to look at this project. They came back and made a number of recommendations to you about building the business case and some other things. I'd like to have you provide us with that, if you would, please, that report from that consultant. And it's my understanding that you are going out with a new RFP right now that says you don't need to provide us with the business case because it was already done in phase one. I think it's pretty obvious that I'm not satisfied, as I think maybe members of this committee are, that you've made the business case for this. Why would you be putting out a quality assurance RFP that says, don't worry about making the business case because it's already been made, when you haven't reassured us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, the quality assurance vendor we brought in, we asked to take a look at the project, give us an initial assessment of where it was, including the process of going through the business case to date, and give us an indication of what we needed in QA going forward, because what we're doing going forward is the detailed planning and the actual implementation. This is where the rubber hits the road and the real dollars are on the table. That's what we wanted them to focus on. It didn't seem like a wise investment of state money to go back and revisit the top-down analysis process that we've gone through to produce a business case to date. And I don't seem to be able to convey this very clearly, but the top-down business case process is over. And where we are now is trying to respond to what you're requesting, is producing a budget that will answer the questions that you want answered from the ground up. What I know about the budget so far and the numbers I've seen, they will verify, they'll validate that the top-down business case produced was accurate, that it showed us what the savings opportunity was.
Follow-up, Representative Krupp.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the answer. I will tell you that I have some difficulty in understanding why we in this body, it is now the 11th hour. Tomorrow is the 1st of June. Now, this process will be complete in about 30 days or less of this conclusion of the 73rd Legislative Assembly. Now, why on earth have we not had the detailed dollar figures in front of us for a lot longer than maybe 1 or 2 weeks before we go home? Now, I don't like that. I don't think that passes the smell test. I don't think it gives us the opportunity as representatives of the people to make a good decision about whether this is real or not, or it's going to be the next DMV problem that we have to face in this state. I'm glad to hear about quality assurance and that there's outside people. I think that's a good idea. But I have got to see the actual dollar figures. And looking through this document, you've got a lot of staff time from a lot of agencies involved in this document. I don't see that reflected anywhere in the costs here. I want to know what those costs are. It costs you money, time. It costs the state of Oregon your time to be involved in this project. How many hours, Mike, have you put in on this project over the last couple of years? It's got to be huge. And if you look at all the state agencies and all the personnel involved, we need to see an accounting of that, because that all figures into the cost of this project. And when you're asking us at the 11th hour to approve $100 million plus spending, I've got to see all of the cost accounting. I cannot emphasize that enough. If we don't get that document, this thing's not going forward. That's the bottom line. And the sooner you get it to us, the better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, I guess somewhat along those same lines as Representative Krupp was asking questions. I mean, and by the way, I want to thank you for getting this these documents to us as promptly as you did last week. It was made for some great reading. you know, the under the tab in binder one, under the tab called business case presentation and details, starting on page 19 of that section, there were some pages there that were not included in the handout last week during the informational meeting, and they give us a little bit more indication on some of these dollar figures that at least in my mind, and I think Representative Corp and some others are looking at. But the thing that, for example, on page 19, where we look at the summary of financial data, and let's just take an example, annual recurring savings for server and storage originally was $4.9 million. There was no change, so the updated business cost savings is $4.9 million. Now, to me, that has the potential of becoming a performance measure in the context of budgeting and being able to judge the effectiveness of this project. But to me, what I'd like to see is, you know, what is the baseline? What are we judging that from? Is it the 03-05 budget for all these agencies? Is it the average of their last 5 years' expenses for this? So first of all, we need the baseline. Then what is the target, which presumably might be the 4.9? And then down the road, what was the accomplishment? At what point do we measure performance, success, or otherwise? And it seems to me that there's a number of these things that we ought to be looking at. The timeline is one of them. We've got a timeline, and I think we need to figure out how exactly do we measure the accomplishment relative to that. The transition costs, avoidance costs, you've got a lot of them listed here. I think payback period's one. You know, if we're going to be servicing debt, we need to make sure that we're on track, and that target payback period is something that we accomplish. Cybersecurity, you know, one of the main reasons we're doing this, which I fully understand and fully support, is to improve the ability for cybersecurity. But how do we measure that? That's not a dollar figure. I mean, what is the performance measure to demonstrate to the public that their taxpayer dollars are being well spent to make sure that we're doing the absolute best we can for cybersecurity of their information? And same thing with FTEs. I mean, we've got people that are involved with this. You know, what are some targets here? What are we going to do? And I didn't see that in here, and I may not have caught it, but if I may go forward to the tab, and this is, I think, getting along the lines of what Representative Krupp was talking about. Under the quality management tab, under that section, there were several of them, and if you'll turn to the one update, quality management, then you have assessment, then you have update. On page 2 of that, I see recommended scenic quality assurance focus areas. Validation of the business case, which I think is a lot of what you've been talking about, and actually I have here with some of these dollar figures. You know, what is the process to actually realize the benefits? The third bullet gets to what Representatives Worth and what we're talking about. Human resources, how do we deal with that? The critical path analysis. But I don't see the meat on these bones here. And, you know, when I'm looking for where are the actual performance measures, I don't see that here. And then if we turn to the next tab called Plan, we have a document there, Quality Management Work Plan Version Draft Number 1, dated May 1705. And if you'll notice the deliverable schedule under Item 3 in the table there, for the most part, all of these are after the end of June this year, which I think gets back to the point that Representative Carper was raising earlier. It seems to me that we need to have this quality management plan, I guess. But let me ask you this. Is the quality management, when I talk about performance, measurable performance standards, is that what you anticipate the quality, the QA, the quality management plan doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, the bulk of what you see here relates to the project itself. So as we do this consolidation, we want to, one, we're going to have a budget that we operate within. We're going to have a timeline within which we're going to consolidate each of the agencies. And we want to be able to do that without breaking anything and end up with the staffing level that we end up with. What QA does is focus on the project on those components, and we specifically want to focus on when we're actually doing something, when we're when the rubber meets the road, so to speak. And that's what this QA contract is focused on. We also will have to have the capacity to measure against the budget. I mean, that's what the budget document basically has a couple of purposes. It sets the funding level requirement for each one of these functions, but the budget also is a control against which we measure to determine if we've been successful or not. The budget will show you exactly what's going to be expended, both in the project and to operate the data center during the transition and in the agencies, and that's what we would, you know, that's what we measure against. That becomes the target.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair. So, if I understand what you're saying, Mike, then the types of things that I'm interested in seeing, for example, the annual recurring operating savings, you know, what's the baseline, what's the target, what's the accomplishment, what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is these are all going to be dealt with in the budget process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that's correct. That's part of the whole plan, the operational plan for the state data center and the transition plan.
Will there be in the budget, not having seen this package, will there be a performance measure there on demonstrating improved cybersecurity?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that's not part of the state data center. I believe when we talked with this committee before about cybersecurity, one of the things we said was that it's a tough question to answer. How do I know I'm more secure today than when I was yesterday? And there are, frankly, today in state government that don't exist really good metrics for that. I mean, we could tell you how many attacks or intrusions we might have prevented, but that's not part of the state data center budgeting process. It's going to be part of the cybersecurity program to develop those metrics and be able to answer that question.
I think Dallas can give you an answer to that, Representative Burley.
With respect to cybersecurity, in the Department of Administrative Services budget, they've been directed to develop performance measures with respect to cybersecurity, specifically the interim, if you will, legislative committee that reviews those is the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. The Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee and the Emergency Board quite often are involved with this type of project over time. So between those three agencies, there will be continued reporting and feedback, and I'll probably be working that budget, the scenic budget, and we will be putting in those sorts of reporting requirements so that you folks, being the committees involved, the legislative body, will be apprised and kept abreast of the situation, what is happening, and with all due respect, one of the targets here is to save money, and we intend to do that through the budget process, and we will be working to develop to track against so that you'll be able to see how it compares then to whether or not the business case in fact will be made through that process. We fully expect that it will be. And that is the intent through that segregation of the budget by putting it in a separate bill so that it would be easily identified and tracked as opposed to losing it in a whole a department.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mike, originally in the proposal that was brought before the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management Technology dated September 14, 2004, you talk about there's two centers here, basically. One is the first center, and then the second one is a backup, basically. But yet I don't, in the proposal you gave us the other day, dated May 23rd, I don't see the backup. So for all this money we're spending, how do we back up this stuff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, that's a great question. That was one of the very issues that we wanted to evaluate in the business case, was whether we go consolidate to a single or two data centers. And really what drives that in the state of Oregon's case is economics versus risk mitigation. So the reason you do two data centers is so that one can function as the backup for the other. In order to do that, typically a data center, when you reach about 80% of capacity, as a rule of thumb, you need to add more capacity. To act as a backup site, you're only going to be able to run it around 40% capacity to do that very effectively, to act as a backup site. So it becomes inherently inefficient. the scale at which the state of Oregon operates is that we're not very big. When you consolidate all of our infrastructure, we're about a medium-sized data center. So it didn't make sense economically. Now, what that does is it means that you have to have a good disaster recovery capability. We have what's called a hot site contract with a vendor, SunGard in this case, that provides hot site capability. That means you're able to get your applications up and running at a remote site. There's also what's called warm site, which means it takes a little bit longer to bring it up. So we would have, as part of this planning process, a disaster recovery planning process that would enable the state to recover in the event that, say, an asteroid lands on the building or some, you know, you have some kind of a disaster like that. Now, one of the things we've done also to respond to that is that we have substantially beefed up the capabilities of that data center in terms of being redundant. So it just received what we call Tier 3 certification, and what that means specifically is that all of its critical systems are engineered to be redundant. So, for example, if there's a key switch somewhere in there, an electrical switch, there needs to be another key switch in there so that if one of them fails or you need to replace one, you never experience any downtime. That's what Tier 3 certification means, and that data center has been certified at Tier 3. So it's much better facility than anything we have today in terms of reliability, and we'll have a good disaster recovery plan, which we don't have today, by the way, uniformly throughout the participating agencies.
Mr. Chairman, one last comment, and I appreciate that, and I do think that's appropriate. I appreciate the attention to efficiency. Here's my problem, though, is that this report, September 14th, 2004, is partially what, because I got this from Dallas. He made this photocopy of this for me. This is what was presented, as I understand it, as part of the decision-making process to go forward with this project. And you've just made my case for me as to why we need to slow down on this thing, because you've changed.
No.
We made a decision here based on this document. No?
No.
You're shaking your head no.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I understand the confusion. We actually were asked to present two options, and we presented two options. The option that we recommended and that was approved was a single data center option. That document that you're referring to shows the two options and the relative cost analysis of each of the two, because we wanted to know whether it made more sense to do two or one data center. So we recommended moving to a single data center. The governing board adopted that recommendation, recommended it to the governor, and that's what we have presented consistently to this and other committees.
Okay, I'll accept that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Worth.
Question along the lines there, Representative Krupp. So how much, it appears to me when I was reading through the business case that the one center scenario was selected primarily to build the case for potential savings. So what kind of consultation did you do with outside experts or other, I mean, wouldn't nearly all experts concur that a two-center data center scenario is preferred in this situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, nearly everybody would agree that a two data center is better to have if you have another live backup. There's also an economic component to that equation. If you take a look at both public and private sector organizations, you have to achieve a balance between cost effectiveness and risk mitigation. And in this case, it's very clear that a single data center makes the most sense, not just for the state of Oregon, but if we were running a company with this kind of complexity and diversity and this size, we would make that same kind of a decision, and we would have a hot site capability. That would be the most rational way to approach this from a cost perspective and risk mitigation perspective. It's always good to have, just as an engineering principle, it's always great to have built-in redundancy and failover, but there's a cost associated with that. And so we can accomplish the same objective by having a single data center and a hot site.
So follow up, Mr. Chairman. So you would say that the choice of a one-center scenario was primarily due to need and not necessarily to build the case for potential savings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, we were asked, the primary purpose of the project was to save money while maintaining or improving service levels. That was one of the key objectives. So cost did become the determining factor there. I just want to make sure I'm clear about this. When you compare two data centers to a single data center, we really don't gain anything more in terms of security than we would gain through a disaster recovery contract and a hot site contract. It's just a different means of achieving the same end. The difference is that we don't have to maintain that redundant infrastructure. We're buying that service from somebody who's in the business of maintaining that redundant infrastructure.
So we assume negligible increase in risk, then, you're saying?
That's correct.
Are there any other questions or concerns?
One question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummer.
Mike, you mentioned the certification being a Tier 3 certification for the data center. Is that certification for the design of it, and then they will come back and certify it a second time again once it's built and ready to go online?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, that's correct. The center, by the way, if you haven't been by there recently, it's very far along now. It looks like a data center. Most of the redundant infrastructure I talked about is in place. So it's based on what's been done to date and the design of everything that needs to happen going forward. They've approved the remaining plans. So, and they always qualify that certification with, barring any substantial deviation from the plans, we're certified at Tier 3. We would, yes, have somebody take a look at that and ensure that we had done that. And that's part of the assurance process that happens in the facilities project, which we've now exhausted my level of knowledge about the management of the facilities project, but I know that I've been following it, and I have a project manager who's on that, and we would make sure that it meets Tier 3 certification.
And the they is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummel, it's an independent third-party engineering firm that comes in and says, yeah, this meets the requirement.
Thank you.
With that,
one last question, if I may.
Certainly, Representative Crummel.
Thank you. I have a number of questions that were generated out of the business case scenario that are here, and I'll present those to you in writing because I need to understand just all the dollars and figures that you have going here. The facility issue, because the data center is nearing completion, is it on budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I believe it's actually under budget.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, could you provide us with that documentation?
We could do that, definitely.
Yeah, thank you. Yes,
I appreciate it. But all questions have been answered. Let me wrap this up, Mike, and tell you where, as the committee chair, I feel we are. Early in the process, we talked about a plan. And we talked about a plan where we might monitor progress, determine whether this project is on schedule, ahead of schedule, or behind schedule. And somewhere in that conversation, we missed the boat. We did not communicate. And when the plan came, it wasn't what I had in mind. I didn't know Malpo's. I'm not very comfortable. I want to tell you what I'm going to do for the second part of this plan. Saving money is a huge issue, and I want to be crystal clear on what we're asking for, and that is a bottom-up budget with anticipated savings. Now, whether we'll have another meeting or not, I don't know. I'm going to visit with the subcommittee in budget and see if it's necessary. I'm looking at my committee members because I know a lot of them have a lot of questions. But I want that sheet of paper that I can say in 2 years we did save money or we didn't. And I don't think that's an unreasonable request. I am concerned about the 11th hour. I am concerned when one is in the dark. It matters not how he got there, but he knows he's there. And that makes me nervous when I'm a legislator and in the dark. Now that I've read the plan, I have all the confidence in the world. I've always had confidence in you, your department, your people. But when I feel like I'm being led around, it creates mistrust. And I want that budget. I also want a cost accounting. How much have we got into this? And are we going to be able to get it out? And that should make that clear. Now, whether or not we need another meeting of this committee, unless this committee absolutely tells me they want to meet, I will get them that information. If you have questions, perhaps we can determine that then. We are coming to the stage of the game where this process is shutting down. And to have another meeting, I'll have to have special permission from the speaker. So I will be monitoring that. I will sit in with Representative Krupp on his committee. You know what we want. You know what we need. Get a force. Are there any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, just that when you get that information or having them share the same information that they give to you with the rest of the committee, I think would be very helpful. At least it would to us.
I will
this is one of the problems that in the legislative process that we come upon with regards to the budgeting process, and that is the Ways and Means folks and the people that are on the budget committees know the budget stuff real well. The rest of us don't, and so getting this information is extremely helpful, and it's extremely helpful for us to be able to support the projects.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Mike. With that, we'll recess the meeting.
Adjourn
the meeting. I'll have this down in another 2 years.
In a few years.
I guess you got to be a committee chair.